shout out Spain. Welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 60. I'm Chuck Werner. With me, as always, is Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, Dave. It's episode 60, as I just said. That's a big number, Dave.
It's not bad. We're doing pretty good. We're chugging along.
We've done 60 episodes.
Good for us.
That's like probably, what do you think, 90 hours?
Yeah, something like that. At least. I don't know.
Let's say 90 hours. I think we're closing in on 4 days, is what I want to say.
Uh-huh.
We're closing in on 4 days of podcasting. Not in a row. I mean, you could make it in a row if you want to out there in audience land.
All the audio's right there, no one's stopping you.
Yeah, just go crazy. Stream that one after another. Bam, 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 bam.
Secret is we need to get it to 127 hours. Because then that guy who's trapped in a mountain.
Yeah, he could listen to all the episodes. He'd be fine.
Yep. And then he cuts his arm off.
I mean, he'd have to cut his arm off, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Also, spoiler alert, he went to the same college we did, right?
Spoiler alert, I have no idea. Like, I know that there was a guy and he cut his arm off, and that's about the extent of my knowledge on that subject.
All right, then.
Lots of people went to the same school we did. Siler. Spock. Yeah. Mr. Spock.
That's the same guy, but yeah.
Shut up.
Oh, man. That joke would have been really fun if you could have named any other things he did. And then it was kept on doing a list of things, and it was all the same guy.
Yeah. No. But that can't be done.
I think, are those the things he's done? That may be the two.
I think that may be the two.
Okay.
You go with,
that's still not bad. That's still not bad.
Blair Underwood? Underwood? Yeah, right?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Holly Hunter?
I don't know. But Blair Underwood is Stanley in an African-American version of A Streetcar Named Desire. I think it's on Broadway right now.
Good for him.
Good for him. He gave the commencement speech at my graduation.
Hmm. Bill Cosby did mine uninteresting. For no particular reason.
Yeah, Bill Cosby did yours.
And he didn't go to anywhere. Because it was Bill Cosby.
As far as I remember, if I may, I remember you saying that this was a part of the speech. Nerds!
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh, good.
You can check it out. It's pretty good.
That's okay. And I heard he also wore Crocs, right?
I don't remember.
I heard that Bill Crosby.
And the YouTube thing was up.
I heard that Bing Crosby wore Crocs and ate Jell-O pudding during the commencement speech he gave at Carnegie Mellon.
I think you're getting some telephone misinformation there.
I think I can do a decent Bing Crosby impersonation, but I'm not gonna.
Oh man,
we're moving on.
I was ready. I was ready to come in with my David Bowie highline from Little Drummer Boy.
don't do things like that. Don't do things like that. All right.
I mean, I wasn't. I was just saying because if you were gonna pull out a Bing Crosby, I figured that might be where you were going, so I had that in the chamber. I'm not saying I was eager to do it.
kind of voices. So it's pretty easy. You just kind of go with that. Anyways, Dave, we have a podcast we're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's about stuff, isn't it?
It's about stuff.
Oh, we should move on then.
So let's do some show notes or whatever. I don't know. Technical blah.
Sure. Go for it.
Before you leave the studio today, you're going to get, there's going to be some access to the website exchanged. We're going to be working on not a completely new look, but we're going to update the blog a little bit, make it look a little nicer.
Sure.
I think
sure.
we're going to, this is my promise to the audience. But
man, why you always got to be so making much, promises to the audience? I don't like it. As policy, I do not like this.
I have so much control over it. But what I'd like to do is put up a date when the people can expect the next episode. This serves two functions. One, it makes us look reliable.
That would be a change. That would be a pleasant change.
Like people who care. And two, it kind of holds us to a standard. Like, oh, we said that there would be an episode by blah.
Someone's got to do it.
So someone's got to do it. And, I mean, that really falls to me right now as I'm the editor currently. So, I mean, it really falls to me on to get the release out. Of course, I need you for recording, but Dave, do I really need you for recording?
Hey.
I just take old clips of you and just
okay, yeah, if you're interested in getting some real heavy editing in there, you could probably cut me out of this whole process but still have a show with me.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, feature you.
Do you want me to help? Because, I mean, if you really just want to go that direction, I can just do, like, you some start recording voice takes. Yeah,
yeah, that would be
probably
great.
Like the same kind of way they do that for GPS, like people who do, like, celebrity GPS voices. Just say, all right.
Turn left.
Say turn right, turn left. Here's a list of words that could be streets.
Yeah.
Run it down.
Or we could do, I mean, we could even do it like a video game, like you were doing a video game voiceover, too, you know.
Oh, so okay, you just Dave, give me a couple lines.
Dave, I need a sound of you, the sound of you getting hit by a sword in the chest. Okay. Yeah, give me a few more of those. All right. How about a mace to the head?
It's all pretty similar.
Dagger to the spleen. Dragon bites your arm off.
Oh, my arm. Oh.
Quality.
Oh.
I'm cutting all that.
It seems like this podcast is getting more violent.
I'm making a Skyrim mod of Dave's voice. All right.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, we're going to hopefully have some changes to the website.
And the podcast is going to get more violent.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot more action-adventure into the podcast. But I think we're also kind of maturing into a after 60 episodes, we're kind of maturing into a having a what do you want to say, a niche of kind of pop culture philosophy.
Sure,
you
sure.
See, that's kind of, I think, what our niche is.
That's the direction we've fallen in.
Niche. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we do a little pop culture, we do a little philosophy. We try to take the philosophy and make it, you know, apply it in a pop culture way so people can understand it, Dave.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, we're here to help.
Like teach. Like that popular book series that I was really excited about for, like, I don't know, 1 to 2 books, and then I got kind of bored of conceptually, where it's like blank and philosophy, where blank is some random pop cultural thing.
Oh.
I think I had the Simpsons and philosophy one, and that was all right. And then I didn't have those anymore.
You didn't have
so
those
I was kind
anymore.
Of done with it.
And maybe we'll make a joke here or there.
Yeah, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Oh, yeah, Dave, can I get sound of you reacting to a funny joke by me? All right, good one. That's a cut rap right there.
That was a keeper. That was a keeper.
I could just do the whole podcast with that, just that. I could do, yeah. Just,
and that one was bad.
Hey,
that,
Dave, blah, 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 you know,
yeah, I just
want to
make sure. Use the first one, not the second one.
Take one.
Because the second one, the problem was, I think, given what you've had me doing,
yeah,
that one was kind of a combination one. Was it like I'm in the middle of laughing, and then I got stabbed in the spleen with a dagger.
Yeah, you got stabbed in the spleen with a dagger. I could just do a whole show of just me saying things and you laughing at them. I will make you. I will make you laugh at unfunny shit.
Aww. Keep that one, too. That one was a pretty good keeper, actually.
Yeah.
Aww.
All right. So today we're gathered. Is that all the show notes I had?
Save that as sadlaugh.wave.
I felt like I had another thing. But no, I think we're just talking. We just wanted to talk about briefly trying to get the website up a little better. B, we got a
niche. Other thing you said.
We got a niche.
Sure.
I'm trying to think of this podcast brought to you by the Foundation Institute. You can find out more about them at foundation-institute.org. You can find us on the web at facebook.com/imtryingtothink, twitter.com/imtryingtothink, or our website, imtryingtothink.com. And you can write us at contact@imtryingtothink.com.
It's true. No one will stop you.
So, the topic that we promised to talk about last week, and we're probably, 45 minutes in now?
Yeah, something like.
So, the topic we said we were going to talk about was personal truth, Dave.
Indeed it was.
All right. So I'm sure you've been thinking about this for like 2 weeks now.
Yep.
If not
got a lot
longer.
Of questions about personal truth.
Yeah.
For starters, I just want to give a disclaimer, I think, to the listener. Is often, you know, we're trying to explain concepts and, you know, they start getting a little bit, you know, about, you know, they start getting relative, they start being, you know, different they start being about taking information in context, et cetera, et cetera. And we try and reassure people, you know, as we do, we say, no pomo.
No pomo.
But frankly, I mean, let's just be frank here. If we're going to spend an episode talking about what the concept of personal truth is and means, we probably can't say that. It's probably going to get a little pomo.
I think there's a realm in which we can talk about this without getting postmodern thought mixed into it. And if I may, I don't know where we're even going to start on this topic. It's ponderous, in my opinion. Well, but
I think we could start with just a quick recap. Maybe even hit the clip again if you've got it. Or just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Because
I think talking about context.
Let me see if I can call that up.
We should start with the context of where this even comes from. And then I think there's a couple questions that sort of spring from that.
All right. Well, let me get that thing up. Let's briefly, we could talk about postmodernism.
Sure. Because
we just said that word. So give the folks a quick postmodernism recap, Dave. And I only want like 5 sentences.
That's a little putting me on the spot.
Do it.
But sure. Postmodern thought. Oh, you bastard. You rat bastard.
That is pretty much postmodern thought. Now, the idea, Dave, would be that there is an aspect of truth and reality which is up to the individual to define.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of that there may or may not be an objective. Well, it's depending on your postmodernist, it could be there is no objective truth.
Yes, or that regardless of the existence of an objective truth, subjective truth is more valuable or pertinent,
right,
than objective truth. And that really the problem would be that there are certain things which either you can never discover the objective truth of or which have no objective truth value. Those specifically would probably be
morals is morality, one that gives people fits. Yeah.
Social mores, everything from economics to caste systems, whatever. I mean, politics, just, you know, kind of in general. That would be postmodern. So now let's talk.
Aesthetics, certainly. I mean, that's where you get, you know, postmodern art.
Let's hear the wisdom of Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
The first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, whether it's scientific truth or historical truth or personal truth. It is the guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up and tell the truth about what happened, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
All right. And this all really comes down to us deciding who deserves to wear that uniform.
Of course, of course.
So historical truth and scientific truth we talked about in episode
59. We covered
59.
That. That's good. We're good.
Go back. Rewind. You know what I'm saying? We're not talking about that again. Personal truth, Dave. Now, if I could start off.
Sure.
I'm going to just talk to you about, briefly, the realm of personal truth where there's an intersection, obviously, with postmodern thought, but I think this really goes back to Descartes.
Uh-huh.
Descartes wrote these meditations. He just sat down and started from nothing and just tried to figure out what he could know about the universe, right?
Right, right.
And, of course, everybody knows cogito ergo sum, or sum, I think, actually. Regardless, I didn't take Latin.
Now, just stick with sum. You already scotched the Latin on cogito.
Is it cogito?
Yeah, yeah. Hard G's. Oh. Hard G's.
Cogito ergo sum, right?
That was pretty good.
I never took Latin.
That's all.
I think, therefore, I am, right? Everybody's heard that one. And I think that's kind of where personal truth starts for me as an idea. I mean, I don't actually think this is necessarily what you mean when you say personal truth, but we're going to have to kind of explore all kind of meanings of personal truth because there isn't, not an agreed upon.
It's not
term,
a phrase
but
with
that's
a strict
why it's
definition. Yeah.
And that's why it's interesting to me.
That's why we're not having a discussion about
the
elephant.
Yeah. So
we've got a pretty good idea what those are.
Yeah.
They're the guys with the funny trunks. They eat peanuts.
Yeah, they love peanuts. Scared of mice, though. What are you going to do? Anyways. So.
Can fly if they believe in themselves enough.
If they believe in them. They have to have big ears, too.
I mean, have you seen elephants? They've got that covered.
Pretty sure. Magic feather.
Chuck.
There's a magic feather.
The magic's in them.
What? Okay. So.
Also, there are some crows that are kind of racist, right?
It's
been a while.
Crows.
Well, I mean, they're not racist crows. They're caricature crows.
They're caricatures, yes.
I mean, were they also racist? Like,
I don't
as
think they
characters?
Said anything disparaging about any races as characters.
But do elephants count as a race?
In a way, yeah.
That I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen Dumbo.
You could, yeah. Well, Dumbo's more about you know, an individual of the race of elephants who is an outsider because of his ear size. Anyways, personal truth kind of begins at that level where you only have you and your brain to assess the universe around you. So your personal truth begins at what you can, you know, quote unquote, know, given your senses, which are faulty, and your you know, logic and reason, which are also faulty. So, you know, to a degree, everyone who engages in discovery of the universe or experimentation to uncover truths about an objective reality is always limited by their personal truth. That personal truth being what they, you know, the limitations of what they can know, what they do know, what they think they know, what they are convinced of, and what they might be wrong about.
Okay, so that's actually, there's one interesting distinction in there that I just want to draw out and say how, just to make sure I understand the way you're phrasing that, is, because I could see personal truth in this case, the way you're defining it, what it seems to be is essentially the limitations, you know, pushed onto someone by their personal viewpoint in their search for objective truth, as opposed to, you know, what they find in that search for objective truth, given those limitations?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's a combination of both. First of all, the truth is, of course, what you consider to be fact or a description of, you know, the objective reality around you. I think even if you're a postmodernist, if you call something the truth, you have to believe that that is objective to you. Can you have things that are subjective amongst your own subjective beliefs?
I don't know. You're kind of getting into a second order.
Oh man, that's a meta thing. I think I just confused everybody. So let's move on.
Yeah, when in kind of postmodern thought, you talk about a truth. What does that even mean?
Yeah, and I don't even know if postmodernists really talk about truth. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter.
I guess it would be kind of a truth within context, and that context is you.
Yeah, exactly. In that case. And that's kind of what personal truth means.
You know,
it's
you, it's the systems you're enmeshed in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, in that description I was giving, it's about context. And it is a combination of the things that you have discovered, as well, you know, viewed through the lens of the limitations that you have. Any scientist is going to know that, skeptically speaking, they can only trust their knowledge to whatever, to a certain degree. But
yeah, I mean, if you go to the sort of extremes of, you know, Humean skepticism, right, like at the very outer edge, then, you know, there's no particular proof of causality, and therefore, you know, science doesn't work per se. It just works to the best of our knowledge.
But that's that would be my next point, and that is subtitled "People I Want to Punch in the Face." And that's people who do this pop philosophy BS.
Yeah, who do the Humean thing, but don't understand then what science means and how it works.
Or just say, well, you cling to science, but you can't ever know anything. Or who say, well, what if we're in the Matrix? Okay, this is the classic one for me. Well, what if we're in the Matrix and somebody's just making up all the rules? It doesn't matter. The rules are the rules for a reason. The rules are the rules because we test them and they stay the same. Certain things don't always do, you know, don't always behave the same way. If I rolled a ball bearing down a ramp and timed it, right, Dave?
Yeah.
Even if I had really good equipment.
Nano precise.
The precision, well, that's what I mean. If the equipment was really, really precise, I would see enormous variance in the time it takes for the ball to go down, because every time everything's going to be a little bit different.
Wait.
Something like humidity can...
One question, though.
Yeah.
What would happen if you rolled that ball bearing down a luxury automobile?
Oh, then it would roll perfectly. Yes. Yeah. They're precision manufacturing.
Precision, it's very good craftsmanship.
Right, exactly. So, but that doesn't... Yeah, and that's exactly the problem, is that doesn't invalidate any knowing things about the universe. Because knowing things about the universe is saying, well, these are testable, repeatable, and happen consistently. Doesn't matter if a guy programmed them into a matrix machine. It only matters that they keep working. And thus we can expect that they will keep working. If you don't have, if you don't place any value in the truth that is uncovered by repeatable and reliable experimentation, then I would suggest that since you don't really then have any evidence that gravity will pull you down, you try flying out of a 10th-story window. Also, see how that works for you.
Quick sidebar, just because you mentioned Matrix stuff.
Yeah.
I think in, like, 1999, you know, when that movie first came out.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, sort of freshman to sophomore level, you know, philosophy course teaching professors all just had this excited email that came out that was just like, yes, that suddenly... Because there was actually a pretty classical, or at least I'm not sure if it's classical to, like, old... But at least, you know, in recent, you know, the past two centuries, there's been, you know, a pretty classical, like, philosophical thought experiment, which is the experience machine.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's usually used to talk about, you know, what sense perception means, you know, and, you know, what experience means, you know, just to sum it up quickly is... Well, actually, to sum it up quickly and to get to my point is, it's like the Matrix.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah, if there's a machine that is simulating all your experiences,
there's a lot of interesting things
does
that
it
you can
matter?
Do with, yeah, the experience
you know, is that a difference? Process. So I'm saying, when that movie came out, do you think they all pretty much just had, like, an email that went around that was, like, a big high five? Like,
yeah, and then they went,
holy
and
shit,
they, like,
people, we will be able to teach this and... to children, and they will understand it because
they, went to a theater
they
where
saw
they, could have, like,
they saw this metaphor in a movie.
And have like a Long Island iced tea while they watch the movie. You know?
Oh no, actually, that's one of the problems with 1999 though is they didn't have the booze theaters yet.
Oh really?
I don't know. Maybe the Alamo Draft House existed. I maybe like the movie. One did, but
I well,
but, like you couldn't go to you know your local Cineplex and you
no
know, get a
not
rum
quite.
And Coke.
But I mean, even in the 90s, there were the Beehive in Oakland actually would serve alcohol.
Yeah, there were little local oases, but it hadn't gone national. Like
no,
it
was
now.
Not a national trend. But I don't know when that started at the lows that we possess. We don't possess it, but I mean that we
oh
have.
Man, if we did possess it, that we could
we
watch all the
money?
Movies for free.
No, we wouldn't, because they don't make that much money. Anyways, yeah, you know, then they all went to see The Matrix Reloaded, thinking, yeah, this is going to be great, and then they went home disappointed.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the same thing that happened to everybody.
Same thing that happened to everybody.
All right, but let's spin back from
spin
that.
Spin it back, personal truth, Dave. So, yeah, the classic thought that I always go back to is something that the Dalai Lama said, and there's a whole other... I actually have this huge thing that... to talk about with the Dalai Lama, but that's probably not going to happen anytime in the next couple episodes. So
what do you mean,
matter.
Talk about regarding the Dalai Lama on this podcast, or to talk about with the Dalai Lama?
Both. I wish, if he wants to come on the show, we could talk to him about it.
Oh man, there's few things that would make me, you know, scrounge around and spend a little cash on a third mic, but I guess if the Dalai Lama wants to come on the show, we can
that's
reach
third mic.
We can reach into the pocketbook.
That's we might actually even get like... if the Dalai Lama wants to come to the show, I'll buy us three nice new mics. I'll buy us nice mic stands, you know. We won't have to put our mics in
plastic
jelly
bottles.
Bean containers to hold them up. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad that people don't see behind the scenes of this show. All right, we're going off topic. The Dalai Lama said that if science discovers something that is contrary to Buddhism, then Buddhism will have to change. And that's kind of what I mean by personal truth. In Buddhism, actually, the experience is supposed to be, you know, your primary motivator for what you believe is true. You don't actually hold scripture above personal experience. And I mean, that's, you know, an interesting thing to find in what is quote-unquote a religion. Because that, you know, kind of runs contrary to the concept. But what you have there is an example of something that shows the necessity of self-correcting personal truth. The personal truth cannot be absolute and then be closed to new ideas, new evidence, etc. I mean, if you want to live like an idiot, then
although
whatever.
I gotta say, even in, you know, I do have respect for Buddhism and on a lot of grounds.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, in practice, if you go up to, I don't know, you know, a monastery, you should, okay, guys, I've figured this out. Actually, sevenfold path. There's going to be a lot of talking, and you're going to have to be real sharp.
One of the folds, not to get really that necessary.
You're going to have to be really sharp to,
I can think of at to least get him two
to
go folds.
To change that scripture.
I can think of at least two folds that you could just cut out. Not really necessary, but that's, again, another day. Anyways, yeah, I'm not going to hold up Buddhism as an absolute example of wonderful,
I mean, that's what it should be.
Religiosity.
But I mean, that's what it should be, and I think that's a great, you know, truth and idea to have in the religion. But a lot of religions have a lot of really good ideas.
Yeah, that they don't really use. No, I was just citing that as kind of an interesting example of
the
concept that personal truth, if it is a thing that exists, ought to be something that is open to evidence and the changing. It ought to actually be personal theory. Uh-huh. And the theory, you know, describes and is supported by the evidence. And when new evidence comes that, you know, does not match personal theory, then personal theory must create a new hypothesis. That is the, that, I think that's the ideal way to live and be happy. I think that a lot of distress comes from, well, let's face it, almost all personal distress, anything that counts as an existential dilemma, is generally something that violates your personal truth, which is another point I was going to make about personal truth.
Right. Right. And actually, spinning to a little bit of a different direction on personal truth, just because flipping back to the context of, you know, that quote, one thing I think is interesting that sort of is a different angle on it we haven't been talking about is, in that quote, I think it's pretty clear that personal truth, sort of in that context, is pretty much being used synonymously with, you know, your moral code.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Picard actually means the concepts that I just put forward. I think
means they're good concepts.
Kind of, your honor, if you will, to use a term that is a little bit outdated for the concepts that he's kind of upholding there. But I mean, it is a word that describes that. It's a personal integrity issue.
Yeah, and in this case, you know, I mean, I would say that version of, you know, a personal truth, you know, falls certainly within, I mean, it's a subset of what you've been talking about, but it's that specifically in the moral realm.
I think that integrity is an interesting issue because, to me, the one thing about it is that sometimes your integrity tells you to break your integrity. I was, and this is kind of a side thing, but, you know, just sometimes you think, I'm trying to be loyal to this person, trying to be good to this person, but what they need me to do breaks some other portion of, you know, what I consider
classic dilemmas.
Yeah. Was the guy who couldn't eat dog, but couldn't refuse hospitality, and so to kill him or something, or to break the geas, like an old witch made him, or offered him dog soup.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a Gaelic story, I think.
Yeah.
And thus it's about some guy named Kulkhaq.
Yeah, I was thinking, was it a Kulkane?
I think it might be Kulkhaq.
Klarlakoon.
Kulkhaq.
Tule.
Coelacanth? I don't know. Anyways.
Oh man, if there were more sort of bloody weird Irish folktales about squid, I would be on board.
Well, anyways, Dave, what else do you have to say about personal truth? It's, yeah, okay, well, if you want to, I did actually look this up, and now I've kind of got it. It's, you know, like we were saying.
Okay, yeah, I was, so
in
I
mythology.
Him. I had it.
He has a geas never to eat dog meat, and he's bound by geas to eat any food offered him by a woman, and a hag offers him dog meat, so.
Mm-hmm. And then he explodes?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like
This leads to
being
a death.
Under a geas was
death, so that's bad.
Being under a geas in that kind of story, it's kind of like the ancient mythological version of I believe our modern version is giving a logic puzzle to a robot.
It's true, and a logic puzzle that the robot cannot solve.
Yes, or like a self robot into self contradiction.
Yep, and the robot explodes or tries to take over because you know, its duty is to protect humans, and in order to protect humans, it has to keep them in their homes and prevent them from interacting with each other.
Okay, I think I have a
good
final...
Stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of personal truth as morality, like, I think that's one place where, you know, again, Little Pomo is...
Little Pomo.
That's one place where I think a lot of people sort of freak the fuck out, and... You know, like, you often hear, you know, from people who are, you know, heavily invested in objective morality, you know, whether it's, you know, religious people or just, you know, staunch, you know, non-postmodernists are just like, okay, well, you don't believe in anything, you know, there are no morals, everything is as okay as everything else, and, I mean, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a while since I've read a lot of that stuff, but who said that?
Who said what?
That sort of straw man position? Is there a person who said that per se?
I don't think anyone ever actually says that. And not in a serious philosophy tome, you know what I mean? I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
No one...
I mean, I think to a certain extent, some people who either get that wrong might think that if they don't understand postmodernism.
Yeah, well, you've got the whole... Like, postmodernism is weird because there's an art movement that goes along with it, and then there's a, you know, a thought movement, but then there's post-structuralism,
which is literature. There's
like
literature. There's a problem.
Movement.
A lot of things called themselves modernism.
Yes.
And to be annoying about it, you know, they did that, you know, 90 to 60 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So postmodernism covers a lot of different things in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
But specifically, philosophically, the way we're talking about it, one thing I think a lot of people...
I mean, a lot of postmodernists are just kind of deconstructionists, people who are looking at really deeply tearing apart what we believe and trying to examine why we believe it. And so...
Right, right. And I think from that, some people incorrectly get that straw man of, so everything is as equal to everything else.
I mean, that's it. As soon as you get anthropologists who... come in and kind of don't want to condemn a society's what we would consider backwards thinking about topics, that's when a lot of that comes up too. You just have, you know, when people look at the beliefs of other cultures, they often point to certain things that they want to call the people savages or whatever else. And I mean, some of the behaviors violate human rights on a basic level and should be stopped, and then there are more gray area things where, you know, I mean, if you want to get into it, the one for me is always the French law against Muslim, well, any women, but wearing the traditional headscarf.
Garb, wearing traditional Muslim garb.
Yeah.
It's not a law targeted at Muslims, of course. It's a law about anyone wearing traditional Muslim garb.
Traditional Muslim garb. But you have, it's a conflict of a freedom of religion issue versus an oppression of women issue. And, you know, further, if a woman says, no, I want to wear it because it's my tradition, that's self-reporting. I mean, they could very easily be being forced to wear it and just be telling you that they're doing it by choice. Or... more insidiously, psychologically, they could have been brainwashed or, you know, basically broken down into believing they are subservient and thus have to wear the headscarf. Thus, they're doing it freely of their will, but their will has been compromised.
Yep.
Which,
or...
compromise of will,
yeah, Dave. Compromise of will, that's a whole different thing, because you could... that could mean anything, which is why it's such a complicated issue.
Whole other episode.
But with that kind of thing, and, you know... the stuff you were talking about culturally, what I think sort of postmodernism means in that kind of arena and teaches us is, you know, what is important, I think, in terms of these conflicts is not to just sort of like look at it and be like, okay, we've got our attitudes and ideas and beliefs, and then we can look at what these people are doing and done. It's right or wrong. You know, they get the thumbs up or the thumbs down. I think people who get postmodernism wrong go from that and say, okay, well, that means that nothing is right or wrong, and that's stupid. You're an asshole. Nice job, buddy. But no, what that means is what you have to do. It's a seductive argument because you get to call people assholes.
I like that.
And that's always fun.
That just finishes the argument.
Yeah. But what I think postmodernism, you know, properly
Oh, I didn't turn my phone off. Now I'm a bad person.
Dingle dongle on the phone.
Little dingle dongle. I'm a bad person.
Check that out. I'll keep on chatting away and wrapping this up. So, you know, properly considered, what it means is, you know, it doesn't mean that there's no value to anything, you know, moral value or, you know, and everything is good as everything else. What it means is, you know, before you make your decisions on assigning that moral value, you should at least make an effort and, you know, a serious effort, ideally, to understand the culture and context in which actions are being committed.
Yeah, you've nailed it, I think, pretty well. Good job. Sweet. Of course, I knew that when we were going to tackle the kind of obtuse topic of personal truth that we were going to end up on postmodernism.
Yeah, I knew it too. That's why I warned at the beginning of the show.
All right, well, that's a decent take on personal truth for starters, Dave. But I think we probably have a little more to touch on there. We've got a personal integrity thing that there's a whole lot we could talk about there. Okay, mm-hmm. We've got compromise of will. That's a whole other thing. I got some thoughts for the Dalai Lama.
Yep,
that's three topics that I heard us. You know.
Yep. We got to leave them with more.
Think about what we can talk. Exactly. We're doing a good job of teasing here.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to say is, if you're actually listening to this, which you are, because that's the only way that things can happen. Also, fourth, Dave, we really need to do another show on tautology. Because every time I turn around,
there's more,
and it's just great. Anyways, it is what it is. So we could cover any of those three topics in the next episode.
Three, four, five. We got topics for miles. Yeah. I'll tease something else right now.
Go ahead.
I gotta say, there's an argument that just the more I think about it, you know, it's the one argument between, you know, that you constantly see between, you know, secular humanists or aggressive atheists or, you know, whatever you want to call them, sure, and religious people. It's the one argument that's the worst argument. I never want to hear anyone either side talk about it again. What is it? Should we talk about it? We'll find out later.
What is it? I want to know.
Oh, man. Specifically, it's the one that's basically just, like, is religion a net good or bad for society?
Oh, yeah. Useless.
The worst.
Let's just. The worst. I think I could settle this. I mean, we could still have this whole, show, but let's.
You know, we're about 2 minutes away from 40 minutes. I think we can solve it in 2 minutes.
I can solve it in two minutes. Here you go. Whether it's good or bad for society has absolutely no bearing on whether or not it's true.
Yeah, one, it's completely tangential. It's orthogonal to the sort of more interesting, you know, scientific and metaphysical issues. Two, it is, you know, the ultimate, you know, it has that sort of social science problem of, you know, slash economics problem of being really hard to, you know, study or answer in a definitive way, because we don't have a world without religion. There's no control world. We can't compare.
There's no possibility for experimentation. You can draw statistics all you like, but how do you measure what's good? And more to the point, how do you measure whether it comes from people's religious beliefs or their inherent goodness as people?
Yes, and then
Whatever else, other factors are inside.
Because of the impossibility of doing anything useful with this argument, even ignoring the fact that it's orthogonal with a more interesting argument, let's say theoretically this was an interesting argument. Since there's no good way to, you know, have this argument, it all comes down to the same thing, which is, I will do that argument in about 40 seconds.
Okay. I would time you, but obviously I have watch it's on my wrist.
Durr, the Crusades. Durr, church charity. Durr, the Nazis were atheists. Durr, the Nazis were religious. Durr, it's just weird anecdote. It's an anecdote.
The communists
fight.
Were atheists. Stalin was an atheist, obviously. So there. But then the counter argument to that one always is like, basically, it
burning
was
burning witches.
It,
or something,
no, it was pretty
or
well. No, it's. That the communist state was pretty much a religion, which, when you entomb a guy in glass and thousands of people come to see his corpse, there may be a valid argument there.
But the point is, it's just an anecdote fight.
Yeah, it's just an anecdote fight.
It's the worst.
And it's so, again, it
we
doesn't
can give this
actually
message
matter.
To you guys. Don't have that argument.
Don't have that
ever.
Argument.
I mean, some of the best have fallen for that trap. It's, you know,
it's not worth it.
Pretty much all the public atheists have, you know, had. I mean, not a single person on the planet has ever you know, come away from that argument being like, oh yeah, the Crusades. I guess there's not a God.
I never thought like, about that.
I guess religion is not exist. Good. It never happens.
It's, sometimes people do actually have realizations. Or I don't think they're actually just that they realize all at once that X is true or not true based on one factoid. But sometimes there is that factoid that pushes you over the edge where you're just like, finally, I thought about blah and I realized no or yes or whatever. So, you know, sometimes, but that actually isn't. I don't. Sometimes people do just hear that one argument and flip, but it's usually that they were building to that.
But I think also you could probably have them go with an argument that's less asinine.
Oh, yeah. Anyways.
And it's not worth the collateral damage of having that dumb fucking argument.
Tautologically, since you are listening to this.
You are a listener of this show.
Since you are a listener of this show. Why don't you write us and tell us what episode 61 should be about? And if you don't, we're just going to pick one. But, you know, contact at imtryingtothink.com. Let's make this a little interactive. Come on, we got fans. You guys listen.
Sure.
Let's
do this. Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. So I'm going to try and release this show, Dave. Toot sweet.
Excellent.
Toot sweet.
We'll get files to the file repository.
We should have, meetings about things. Like, we should decide on a release day. Like, we should have a consistent release day. Like, people can expect on every other Tuesday. Or, you know, just on Tuesday.
Something like that, or yeah.
The Tuesdays when we feel like it. But it should be like a consistent
You've got grand
day.
Plans. I like it.
I mean, we'll under, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to think of... ways to make it a little easier to listen to the show and follow us.
All right.
Because we're doing some good... We're doing good work here. Doing the Lord's work. I'm not saying the Lord of what, but there is a Lord, and we're doing his work.
He's a member of the House of Lords.
He's a member of the House of Lords. But not the one you're thinking of.
And I think we can leave it there.
And we're leaving it there. All right, that has been episode 60 of I'm Trying to Think, and it was impressive, to say the least. So it may not have been the, you know, spectacular 60-a-thon that you were expecting, but it was pretty good.
If we don't aggrandize ourselves, who will?
Who aggrandizes the aggrandizers? Is that a thing?
No, and I would have gone with aggrandized men. You know, go whole hog right. with the
What's
phrase.
The Latin for the Watchmen thing? Who watches the Watchmen? Because you took Latin.
Something like quis ipsos custodies.
There
like
you
that.
Go. Qui ipsos custodies, people. And we'll be back in a week or two with episode 61 of I'm Trying to Think. And if you tell us what you want it to be about, tell us what you want it to be about. We might actually listen to you. So for Dave Stern and Chuck Werner, who is me, so I'm always speaking for myself, but, you know, farewell.
Bye-bye.
See what I did there with the Depeche Mode?
Yeah.
It's pretty witty.